that even that weighed on his innocence for her? He'd made a bargain, and though he was angry, he'd keep it. Saying nothing, she dimmed the lights, walked over to turn on her iPod to soothing music. "Close your eyes," she murmured, "and take a deep breath. In, out, another," she said as she poured the oil into her hands. "One more." As he obeyed, she pressed her hands on his shoulders. They didn't even touch the table, she noted. So stiff, so knotted. She stroked, pressed, kneaded, then slid her hands up along the column of his throat before she began a light facial massage. She knew a headache when she saw one. Maybe if she could bring him some relief there, he'd relax a little before she began the heavy work. It was hardly his first massage. Before his life had shattered, he'd used a masseuse named Katrina, a solidly built, muscular blonde whose strong, wide hands had worked out tensions built up from work, strains generated from sports. With his eyes closed, he could almost imagine he was back in the quiet treatment room of his club, having his muscles soothed after a day in court or a couple hours competing on one. Besides, in a few minutes the deal would be met, and the woman who wasn't the sturdy Katrina would be gone. Her fingers stroked along his jaw and pressed under his eyes. And the screaming violence of the headache quieted.
"Try another breath. Long in, long out."
Her voice melted into the music, just as fluid and soft.
"That's good. Just in, then out."
She turned his head, worked those fingers up one side of his neck, then the other, before she lifted his head. Here, the firm, deep press of her thumbs brought a quick, stunning pain. Before he could tense against it, it released, like a cork from a bottle.
"Like breaking up concrete," Abra thought, "an inch at a time."
So she closed her eyes as she worked, visualized that concrete softening, crumbling under her hands. When she moved to his shoulders, she increased the pressure, degree by degree. She felt him relax, a little, not enough, but even that slight yield equaled the victory. Down his arm, kneading the tired muscles all the way down to his fingertips. Part of her mind might have smiled smugly when that 10-minute deadline went by unnoticed, but she focused the rest on doing the job. By the time she lifted the face rest, she knew he wouldn't argue.
"I want you to turn over, scoot up and lower your face into the rest. Let me know if you need me to adjust it. Take your time."
Zoned, half asleep, he simply did as he was told. When the heels of her hands pressed into his shoulder blades, he nearly moaned from the glorious mix of pain and release.
"Strong hands," he thought.
She didn't look strong, but as they pushed, rubbed, pressed, as her fists dug into his back, aches he'd grown used to carrying rose to the surface and lifted out. She used her forearms, slick with oil, her body weight, knuckles, thumbs, fists. Every time the pressure hovered on the edge of too much, something broke free. Then she stroked, stroked, stroked. Firm, rhythmic, constant. And he drifted away. When he surfaced, floating back to consciousness like a leaf on a river, it took him a moment to realize he wasn't in bed. He remained stretched out on the padded table, modestly covered by a sheet. The fire simmered. Candles glowed. Music continued to murmur in the air. He nearly closed his eyes and went under again. Then he remembered. Eli pushed himself up on his elbows to look around the room. He saw her coat, her boots, her bag. He could smell her, he realized. That subtle, earthy fragrance that mixed with the candle wax, the oil. Cautious, he pulled the sheet around him as he sat up. He needed his pants, first things first. Holding the sheet, he eased off the table. When he reached for his jeans, he saw the damn sticky note.
"Drink the water. I'm in the kitchen."
He kept a wary eye out as he pulled on his pants, then picked up the water bottle she'd left beside them. As he shrugged on his shirt, he realized nothing hurt. No headache, no toothy clamps on the back of his neck, none of those twinges that dogged him after his attempts to get some exercise. He stood, drinking the water in the room, soft with candlelight and firelight and music, and realized he felt something he barely recognized. He felt good. And foolish. He'd given her grief deliberately. Her answer had been to help him, despite him. Chastised, he made his way through the house to the kitchen. She stood at the stove in a room redolent with scent. He didn't know what she stirred on the stove, but it awakened another rare sensation. Genuine hunger. She'd chosen grinding rock for her kitchen music. Turned it down low. Now he felt a twinge of guilt. No one should be forced to play good hard rock at a whisper.
Abra.
She jolted a little this time, which reassured him. She was human, after all. When she turned, she narrowed her eyes, held up a finger before he could speak. Stepping closer, she gave him a long study. Then she smiled.
Good. You look better, rested and more relaxed.
I feel good. First, I want to apologize. I was rude and argumentative.
We can agree there. Stubborn?
Maybe. All right, I can concede stubborn.
Then, clean slate.
She picked up a glass of wine, lifted it.
I hope you don't mind. I help myself.
No, I don't mind. Second, thank you. When I said I felt good, I don't remember the last time I did. Her eyes softened. Pity might have made him tense again, but sympathy was a different matter.
Oh, Eli, life sure can suck, can it? You need the rest of that water, to hydrate and for flushing out the toxins. You may feel some soreness tomorrow. I really had to dig down. Do you want a glass of wine?
Yeah, actually. I'll get it.
Just sit,
she told him.
You should stay relaxed. Absorb that for a while. You should consider booking a massage twice a week until we really conquer that stress. Then weekly would do, or even every other week if that doesn't work for you.
It's hard to argue when I'm half buzzed.
Good. I'll write the appointments down on your calendar. I'll come to you for now. We'll see how that goes.
He sat, took his first sip of wine. It tasted like heaven on his tongue.
Who are you? Oh, such a long story. I'll tell you one day, if we get to be friends.
You've washed my underwear and had me naked on your table. That's pretty friendly.
That's business.
You keep cooking for me. He angled his chin toward the stove. What is that?
Which?
The thing on the stove.
The thing on the stove is a good hearty soup. Vegetables, beans, ham. I gave it a mild kick as I wasn't sure how spicy you can handle. And this?
She turned, opened the oven. More scent poured out and stirred that burgeoning appetite.
Is meatloaf.
You made a meatloaf?
With potatoes and carrots and green beans. Very manly.
She set it on the stove.
You were out over 2 hours. I had to do something.
Two hours? She gestured absently at the clock as she got down plates.
Are you going to ask me to dinner?
Sure. He stared at the clock, then back at Abra. You made meatloaf.
Hester gave me a list. Meatloaf was in the top three. Plus, I think you could use some red meat.
She began to plate the meal.
Oh, by the way, if you ask for ketchup to put on this, I'll hurt you.
So noted and accepted.
One more stipulation?
She held the plate just out of reach. If it's legal, I can almost guarantee agreement in exchange for meatloaf.
We can talk about books, movies, art, fashion, hobbies, and anything in that general area. Nothing personal. Not tonight.
That works.
Then let's eat.
Five. In the church basement, Abra brought her class out of final relaxation slowly. She'd had a class of 12 that morning, a solid number for the time of year, the time of day. The number kept her personal satisfaction high and her budget steady. Conversation broke out as her ladies and two men got to their feet, began rolling up their mats, or the extras she always carted in for those who didn't bring their own.
You had a really good practice today, Henry.
The 66-year-old retired vet gave her his cocky grin.
One of these days I'm gonna hold that half moon longer than 3 seconds.
Just keep breathing,
Abra remembered when his wife had first dragged him, mentally kicking and screaming to her class. Henry hadn't been able to touch his toes.
Remember,
she called out,
East meets West on Thursday.
Maureen walked over as Abra rolled up her own mat.
I'm gonna need it and some serious cardio. I made cupcakes for Liam's class party today and ate 2 of them. What kind of cupcakes? Double chocolate, buttercream frosting, with sprinkles and gumdrops.
Where's mine? Maureen laughed, patted her stomach.
I ate it. I have to go home, grab a shower, put on mom clothes, and take the cupcakes in. Otherwise, I'd beg and bribe you to take a run with me so I could burn that double chocolate off. The kids have an after-school playdate. I'm caught up on paperwork and filings, so I have no excuse. Try me later, after 3. I've got to work until then. Eli? No, he's on tomorrow's schedule. Still going good there? It's only been a couple weeks, but yeah, I'd say it is. He doesn't look at me like, what the hell is she doing here every time he sees me? It's more like every other time now. When I'm there during the day, he's usually closed up in his office writing, and he avoids me by slipping outside for a walk when I head up to do the upstairs. But he's eating what I leave for him, and doesn't look as hollow.
Abra zipped her personal mat into its bag.
Still, every time I give him a massage, I've managed 4 now. It's like starting from scratch. He carries so much tension, plus he's at that keyboard for hours a day.
You'll crack him, abracadabra. I have every faith.
That's my current mission.
Abra pulled on her hoodie, zipped it.
But right now I've got some new jewelry to take into buried treasures, so fingers crossed there. Then I'm running some errands for Marcia Frost. Her boy's still got that virus and she can't get out. I've got a massage booked at 2, but I'm up for a run after that. If I can juggle it in, I'll text you. See you later.
While her class headed out, Abra secured her mats, tucked her iPod into her bag. As she pulled a jacket over her hoodie, a man came down the stairs. She didn't recognize him, but he had a pleasant enough face, baggy eyes that made him look tired, a thick crop of brown hair, a slight paunch, which would have improved if he didn't slouch.
Can I help you?
I hope so. Are you Abra Walsh?
That's right.
I'm Kirby Duncan.
He held out his hand to shake, then offered her a business card.
Private investigator.
Instinctively, her barriers went up.
I'm doing some work for a client out of Boston. I'm hoping I can ask you a few questions. I'd love to buy you a cup of coffee, if you can spare me a few minutes.
I've already had my quota for the day.
I wish I could stick with a quota. God knows I drink too much coffee. I'm sure that coffee shop just down the street serves tea or whatever you like.
I have an appointment, Mr. Duncan,
Abra said as she pulled on boots.
What's this about?
Our information indicates you're working for Eli Landon.
Your information?
His face remained pleasant, even affable.
It's no secret, is it?
No, it's not. And it's also none of your business.
Gathering information is my business. You must be aware Eli Landon is a suspect in the murder of his wife.
Is that accurate?
Abra wondered as she pulled on her cap.
I think it's more accurate to say after a year of investigating, the police haven't been able to gather the evidence to show Eli Landon had anything to do with his wife's death.
The fact is, a lot of prosecutors won't take on a case that's not a slam dunk. That doesn't mean there isn't evidence. There isn't a case. It's my job to gather more information. Let me get that for you.
No, thanks. I'm used to carrying my own.
Who do you work for? Abra asked him.
Like I said, I have a client.
Who must have a name?
I can't divulge that information.
Understood.
She smiled pleasantly, walked to the stairs.
I don't have any information to divulge either.
If Landon is innocent, he has nothing to hide.
She paused, looked Duncan in the eye.
Seriously? I doubt you're that naive, Mr. Duncan. I know I'm not.
I'm authorized to compensate for information,
he began as they went up the steps into the little church proper.
You're authorized to pay for gossip? No, thanks. When I gossip, I do it for free.
She walked out and turned toward the parking lot and her car.
Are you personally involved with Landon?
Duncan called out. She felt her jaw tighten, cursed the fact he'd ruined her post-yoga mood. She tossed her mats, her bag, in the car, opened the door, and in a wordless reply to his question, shot up her middle finger before she got in, turned the key, and drove off. The encounter kept her in a state of irritation as she segued from job to job, task to task. She considered canceling her massage booking, but couldn't justify it. She couldn't penalize a client because some nosy detective from Boston was poking around in her life. Because he dug under her skin so quickly, she'd been rude. Not her life, she reminded herself. Not really. Eli's. Regardless, it struck her as monumentally unfair and intrusive. She knew all about unfair and intrusive. When Maureen texted her about taking a run, she nearly made an excuse. Instead, she decided the exercise and company might be just what she needed. She changed, zipped on her hoodie, pulled on her cap, tugged on fingerless gloves, and met her friend at the beach steps.
I need this.
Maureen jogged in place.
18 kindergartners on a sugar high. Every teacher in America should have their salaries doubled and get a bouquet of roses every freaking week. And a bottle of Landon Whiskey's gold label.
I take it the cupcakes were a success.
They were like locusts,
Maureen said as they started down to the beach.
I'm not sure there was a stray sprinkle left. Everything okay?
Why?
You've got that little deal here.
Maureen tapped herself between her eyebrows.
Damn.
Instinctively, Abra rubbed at the spot.
I'm gonna get lines there. I'm gonna get culverts there.
No, you won't. You only get that crease when you're really upset or pissed off. Which is it?
Maybe both.
They started off at a light jog, the ocean frothing on one side, the sand with its clumps and pockets of snow on the other. Knowing her friend, Maureen said nothing.
Did you see that guy when you were leaving class this morning? About average height, brown hair, nice face, little paunch?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah. He held the door for me. Why? What happened?
He came downstairs.
What happened?
Maureen stopped dead, then had to kick up her pace as Abra kept going.
Honey, did he try something? Did he...
No, nothing like that. This is Whiskey Beach, Maureen, not Southie.
Still, damn it, I shouldn't have left you alone down there. I was thinking cupcakes, for God's sake.
It wasn't anything like that. And who taught that course on self-defense for women?
You did, but that doesn't mean your best friend just strolls off and leaves you alone that way. He's a private detective from Boston. Come on!
Abra said when Maureen stopped again.
Keep up. I have to run this mood off. What did he want? That bastard's still in prison, isn't he?
Yes, and it wasn't about me. It was about Eli.
Eli? He said private detective, not the police. What did he want?
He called it information. What he wanted was for me to gossip about Eli. He wanted dish and dirt, and he offered to pay me. Looking for an inside man,
she spewed.
Somebody who'd spy on Eli and pass on what he's doing, what he's saying. I don't even know, because Eli's not doing or saying anything. And when I told him basically to get lost, he asked if Eli and I were involved, which sounded a hell of a lot like asking if Eli and I were screwing like bunnies. I didn't like it. I didn't like him. And now I'm going to get culverts on my face.
Temper and exercise pinkened Maureen's face. Her voice, breathless with both, lifted over the surge and crash of waves.
It's none of his damn business if you are screwing like bunnies. Eli's wife's been dead a year, and they were already in the middle of a divorce. And they don't have anything but the most circumstantial of evidence against him. The cops can't prove anything, so now they're reaching, digging in the dirt. I don't think cops hire PIs. I guess not. Who does? I don't know.
As her muscles warmed, as the chilly air washed over her face, Abra found her mood leveling.
Insurance company? Maybe his wife had insurance and they don't want to pay. Except he said he was hired by a client, and he wouldn't tell me who. Maybe insurance company lawyers or, I don't know, the dead wife's family, who's always trashing him in the press. I don't know.
I don't know either. Now let me ask Mike.
Mike? Why?
He deals with lawyers and clients all the time.
Real estate lawyers and clients, Abra pointed out.
A lawyer's a lawyer. A client's a client. He might have an idea. He'll keep it confidential.
I'm not sure that part matters. If this guy hunted me down, who knows who else he's talking to? It's all getting stirred up again.
Poor Eli. You've never believed he did it either.
No.
Why do you believe him, Maureen? Well, as you know, I got my detective's license from TV. That said, why would a man who never exhibited violent behavior suddenly bash his wife in the head with the fireplace poker? She cheated on him, and that pissed him off. It also made her look bad as they moved forward with the divorce. Sometimes I want to bash Mike's head in with the poker.
You do not.
Well, not literally, but my point is I really love Mike. I think you have to really love or really hate somebody to want to bash their brains in. Unless it's about something else. Money, fear, revenge. I don't know.
So who did it?
If I knew that and could prove it, I'd be promoted from detective to lieutenant. Or captain. I'd like to be captain.
You already are. Captain of the good ship O'Malley.
That's true. You can be captain of the made-for-TV police department in charge of clearing Eli Landon once and for all.
At her friend's silence, Maureen slapped out a hand to hit Abra's arm.
That was a joke. Don't even think about getting involved in any of it. It'll blow over, Abra. Eli'll get through it.
Well, what could I do?
And the question, Abra decided, didn't promise not to do something. When they turned at the halfway point to jog back, she realized she was glad she'd come out. A good way to think, to shove away a bad mood, to get some perspective. She'd missed running during the cold grip of winter, missed the sound of her own feet slapping against the sand while she gulped in the sea air. She wasn't one to wish time away, not even a minute, but she could, deeply, long for spring and the summer that followed. Would Eli still be at Bluff House, she wondered, when the air began to warm and the trees to green? Would spring's balmy breezes blow away the shadows that dogged him? Maybe those shadows needed a little help on their way out the door. She'd think about it. Then she saw him, standing at the water's edge, hands in his pockets, gaze on the far horizon.
There's Eli now.
What? Where? Oh, shit. What's the problem? I didn't imagine running into him the first time when I'm sweaty and red-faced and huffing. A woman likes to hold a certain standard for chance meetings with her first serious make-out partner. Why did I wear my oldest jogging pants? These make my legs look like tree stumps.
They do not. I'd never let you wear pants that made your legs look like tree stumps. You're insulting my code of friendship.
You're right. That was small and selfish of me. I apologize. Accept it, but watch it. Eli! Shit!
Maureen grumbled again when he turned. Why hadn't she at least stuck some lip gloss in her pocket? Abra lifted a hand. She couldn't see his eyes, not when he wore sunglasses. But he didn't just wave and walk away. He waited, and she took that as a positive sign.
Hi!
She stopped, braced her hands on her thighs as she stepped one leg back to stretch.
If I'd seen you earlier, we'd have talked you into a run.
Walking's more my speed these days. His head turned a fraction before he took off his sunglasses. For the first time, Abra saw him smile all the way through, when his gaze held and warmed on Maureen's face.
Maureen Banion, look at you!
Yeah, look at me.
With a half laugh, she lifted a hand to push at her hair before remembering she wore a ski cap.
Hello, Eli.
Maureen Banion, he repeated.
No, sorry, it's... what is it?
O'Malley.
Right. Last time I saw you, you were...
hugely pregnant.
You look great.
I look sweaty and windblown, but thanks. It's good to see you, Eli.
When Maureen just moved in, wrapped her arms around Eli for a good, hard hug, Abra thought that just that was why she'd fallen in love with Maureen so fast, so completely. That simple, straightforward compassion, that naturally inclusive heart. She saw Eli close his eyes and wondered if he thought of a night under the Whiskey Beach pier when everything had been simple, had been innocent.
I've been giving you time to settle in,
Maureen said as she eased back.
Looks like time's up. You need to come to dinner. Meet Mike, the kids.
Oh, well...
We live in Seabreeze, right next door to Abra. We'll set it up and we'll catch up. How's Hester?
Better. A lot better.
You tell her we miss her in yoga class. I've got to run and pick up my kids from a play date. Welcome back, Eli. I'm glad to know you're back at Bluff House.
Thanks.
Talk to you later, Abra. Hey, Mike and I are planning on having a date night at the Village Pub on Friday. Talk Eli into coming.
With a quick wave, she ran off. I didn't realize the two of you knew each other, Eli began.
BFFs.
Uh-huh.
It's not just for teenagers, and BFFs of any age tell each other everything.
He started to nod. Then she saw it hit him. Oh, well, he slid his sunglasses back into place. With a laugh, she gave him a poke in the belly.
Sweet and sexy teenage secrets.
Maybe I should avoid her husband.
Mike? Absolutely not. Besides hitting very high on my personal scale of adorable, he's a good man. A good daddy. You'll like him. You should drop into the pub Friday night.
I don't know it.
It used to be something else. Kittydids?
Right, yeah, sure.
It went downhill, I'm told, before my time. New name, new owners the last 3 years. It's nice, fun. Good drinks, good crowd, and live music Friday and Saturday nights.
I'm not really looking to socialize.
You should. It'll help with that stress level. You smiled.
What?
When you recognized Maureen, you smiled. A real one. You were happy to see her, and it showed. Why don't you walk with me?
She gestured up the beach in the direction of her cottage. Rather than give him a chance to decline, she just took his hand, began to walk.
How are you feeling?
She asked.
Since the last massage.
Good. You were right. I usually feel it some the next day, but that eases off.
You'll get more benefits when we finally break up those knots, get you used to being loose. I'm going to show you some yoga stretches.
No, she couldn't see his eyes, but she could see the wariness of his body language. I don't think so.
It's not just for girls, you know.
She let out a long sigh. Is something wrong?
I'm having a mental debate with myself, whether or not I should tell you something. And I think you have a right to know, even though it's probably going to upset you. I'm sorry to be the one to upset you.
What's going to upset me?
A man came in to talk to me after my morning class, a private detective, investigator. His name's Kirby Duncan, from Boston. He said he has a client there. He wanted to ask me questions about you.
Okay.
Okay? It's not okay. He was pushy, and he said he'd compensate me for information, which I find personally insulting, so that's not okay. It's harassment, which is also not okay. You're being harassed. You should...
Tell the cops? I think that ship's sailed. Hire a lawyer? I've got one.
It's not right. The police hounded you for a year. Now they or somebody's hiding behind lawyers and detectives to keep on hounding you? There should be a way to make them stop.
There's no law against asking questions. And they're not hiding. They want me to know who's paying for the questions, the answers.
Who? And don't say it's none of my business.
She snapped out, and Casey tried to.
That jerk approached me, and he implied I refused to cooperate because we had a personal relationship, which easily translated to sleeping with you.
I'm sorry.
No.
As he'd pulled his hand free, she just grabbed it again.
You won't be sorry. And if we did have a personal relationship, the kind he meant, it's none of his damn business. We're adults. We're single. And there's nothing wrong, nothing immoral, nothing, period, about you moving on with your life. Your marriage was over before your wife died. Why shouldn't you have a life that includes a relationship with me or anyone?
Her eyes, he noted, turned a particularly glowing green when she was angry. Really angry. It sounds like this upsets you more than me.
Why aren't you angry?
She demanded.
Why aren't you seriously pissed?
I spent plenty of time being pissed. It didn't help a hell of a lot.
It's intrusive, and it's vindictive. What's the point in being vindictive when...
It hit her, clear and strong.
It is her family, isn't it? Lindsay's family. They can't let go.
Could you?
Oh, stop being so damn reasonable!
She stalked away toward the verge of foaming water.
I think if she'd been my sister, my mother, my daughter, I'd want the truth.
She turned around, faced him where he stood, just watching her.
How is hiring someone to come here, ask questions here, a way to find the truth?
So it's not especially logical. He shrugged at that. And it's not going to be productive, but they believe I killed her. To them, there's no one else who could have or would have.
That's close-minded and short-sighted. You weren't the only person in her life, and not, even at the time she died, the most important. She had a lover. She had a part-time job. She had friends, worked on committees. She had family.
She stopped, noting the way he frowned at her.
I told you I followed the case, and I listened to Hester. She felt able to talk to me when it was harder to talk to you or your family. I was someone who cared about her, but was not really connected, so she could unload on me.
He didn't speak for a moment, then nodded. It must have helped her to have you to unload on.
It did. And I know Hester didn't like her, not one bit. She would have tried to and would have made her welcome.
I know that.
What I'm saying is Hester didn't like her, and it's very unlikely Hester was the only person in the world who didn't. So, like most people, Lindsay had enemies. Or at least people who didn't like her, had grudges or hard feelings.
None of them were married to her, had a public fight with her the day she died, or discovered her body.
With that line of thinking, I hope to hell you didn't ever consider representing yourself.
He smiled a little. That would give me a fool for a client, so no. But those are all valid points. Add all that to her family's list of grievances. I put my needs and ambitions above hers and didn't make her happy, so she sought happiness elsewhere. She told them I neglected her, then complained about the time she spent on her own interests, that she thought I was having affairs, that I was cold and verbally abusive.
Even though there was never one shred of evidence? Even after a thorough police investigation that you were having affairs? And she was? Or that you were in any way abusive?
I was pretty verbal the last time I spoke to her, publicly.
You both were, from what I read. And all right, I understand the need for family to support, to rationalize, to do whatever comforts, but sicking a private detective on you? Here? There's nothing here. You haven't been here in years, so what could he find?
Yeah, he could see having her to unload on had helped his grandmother. Despite his own reluctance to cover old ground, he knew it helped him. It's not that so much as letting me know they're not going to let me walk away quietly. Her parents are dangling the threat of a wrongful death suit.
Oh, Eli.
I'd say this is just a way to let me know they're using all their options.
Why don't their options include hounding her lover, or someone else she might have been involved with?
He had a solid alibi. I didn't.
What's so solid about it?
He was home. with his wife.
Well, I read all that, heard all that, but his wife could be lying.
Sure, but why? His wife, mortified and angry when she learned from the police he'd had this affair, with someone they both knew, reluctantly swore he'd been home since before 6 that evening. Their stories about the timeline, what they did during the key time, meshed. Justin Susskind didn't kill Lindsay.
Neither did you.
Neither did I. But when you factor opportunity, I had it. He didn't.
Whose side are you on?
He smiled a little. Oh, I'm on my side. I know I didn't kill her. Just like I know, with what they have, I look guilty.
Then they need more. How do you get more?
Well, we've pretty much tapped that out.
They've hired a PI. You hire a PI.
Did that. Got nothing that helped.
So just give up? Stop that.
She gave him a light shove.
Hire another one and try again.
Now you sound like my lawyer.
Good. Listen to your lawyer. You don't just lie back and take it. That's from experience.
She added.
It's that long story I'll tell you one day. For now, I'm saying taking it makes you feel sad and weak and cowardly. It makes you feel like a victim. You're not a victim if you don't allow it.
Did someone hurt you?
Yes. And for too long I did what you're doing. I just accepted it. Fight back, Eli.
She laid her hands on his shoulders.
Whether or not they ever believe you're innocent, they'll know you're not their whipping boy. And you'll know it too.
On impulse, she rose to her toes, brushed her lips lightly over his.
Go, call your lawyer,
she ordered, then walked away toward the beach steps. From above, on the long headland, Kirby Duncan snapped photos through his long lens. He'd figured something was going on between Landon and the long-stemmed brunette. Didn't mean squat, of course, but his job was to document, to ask questions, to keep Landon off balance. People made more mistakes when they were off balance. 6. When Abra came into Bluff House to clean, the scent of coffee greeted her. She scanned the kitchen. He kept it clean and tidy. Then, since he hadn't done so, began to make a shopping list. When he came in, she stood on a step stool, polishing the kitchen cabinets.
Morning!
She sent him a casual smile over her shoulder.
Been up a while?
Yeah. I wanted to get some work in. Particularly since the damn dream had wakened him just before dawn. I need to go into Boston today.
Oh?
I'm meeting with my lawyer.
Good. Have you eaten?
Yes, Mom. Unoffended, she kept polishing.
Will you have time to see your family?
That's the plan. Look, I don't know when I'll be back. I may end up staying overnight. I'll probably stay over.
No problem here. We can reschedule your massage.
I'll leave your money. The same as the last time?
Yes. If there's a difference either way, we'll adjust it next week. Since you won't be working, I'll give your office a quick pass, and I promise not to touch anything on your desk.
Okay. He stood where he was, watching her. She wore a plain black T-shirt today, conservative for her, with snug black pants and red high-top chucks. Chains of little red balls swung at her ears, and he noted a little bowl with several silver rings on the kitchen island. He supposed she'd taken them off to avoid getting polish on them.
You were right the other day, he said at length.
I love when that happens.
She stepped down from the stool, turned.
What was I right about this time?
About fighting back. I let that slide. I had reasons, but they're not working. At least I need to be armed, so to speak.
That's good. No one should have to tolerate being harassed and hounded. And that's what Lindsay's family is doing. They're not going to go through with this suit.
They're not?
There's nothing there, legally, for them to go through with. Not that I can see, and I've watched a lot of lawyer shows.
He let out a half laugh.
That would qualify you.
Pleased with his reaction, she nodded.
I can make a living.
They're just habeasing their corpus, and we're foring the heretofore to screw with you.
That's a unique argument.
And rational. They probably think if they can string this out, keep chipping away at you, maybe they'll uncover new evidence against you. Or at the very least, they'll beat you up, bury you in documents and writs and whatever, so you'll offer a financial settlement, which would prove, to their mind, your guilt. They're grieving, so they lash out.
Maybe you could make a living.
I like the good wife.
Who?
It's a lawyer show. Well, it's really a character study. And sexy. Anyway, what I'm saying is it's good you're going to meet with your lawyer, that you're taking steps. You look better today.
Than what?
Than you did.
Resting her polishing hand on her hip, she angled her head.
You should wear a tie.
A tie?
Normally I don't see the point in a man putting a noose around his neck, which ties are, essentially. But you should wear a tie. It'll make you feel stronger, more in control, more yourself. Plus, you have a whole collection upstairs.
Anything else?
Don't get a haircut.
Once more, she simply baffled him.
No haircut, because...
I like your hair. It's not lawyerly, but it's writerly. A little shaping, if you absolutely feel it's necessary. And which I could actually do for you myself, but...
No, you absolutely couldn't.
I could, on the element of skill. Just don't whack it into the suit and tie lawyer look.
Wear a tie, but keep the hair.
Exactly. And pick up some flowers for Hester. You should be able to find tulips by now, and they'd make her think of spring.
Should I start writing this down? She smiled as she came around the island.
Not only looking better, but feeling better. You're getting some sass back that's not just knee-jerk temper-based.
She brushed at the lapels of his sport coat.
Go pick out a tie and drive safe.
She boosted up, kissed his cheek.
Who are you? Really?
We'll get to that. Say hi to your family for me.
All right. I'll see you when I do.
I'll reschedule the massage. Note it on your calendar.
She walked around the island, climbed back on the stool, and went back to her polishing.
He picked out a tie.
He couldn't say putting it on made him feel stronger or more in control, but it did, oddly enough, make him feel more complete. With that in mind, he got out his briefcase, put in files, a fresh legal pad, sharpened pencils, a spare pen, and, after a moment's thought, his mini recorder. He put on a good top coat, caught a glimpse of himself in the mirror.
Who are you? He wondered.
He didn't look the way he used to, but neither did he look quite the way he'd grown accustomed to. No longer a lawyer, he thought, but not yet proven as a writer. Not guilty, but not yet proven innocent. Still in limbo, but maybe, maybe, finally ready to begin climbing out. He left Abra's money on his desk on his way downstairs, then headed straight out with her cleaning music, vintage Springsteen today, rolling after him. He got into the car, realizing it was the first time he'd been behind the wheel since he'd parked it on arrival 3 weeks before. It did feel good, he decided, taking control, taking steps. He turned on his own radio, let out a surprised laugh when the boss jammed out at him. And thinking it was almost like having Abra for company, he drove away from Whiskey Beach. He didn't notice the car slide in behind him. Since the day was relatively mild, Abra opened doors and windows to let the air wash through. She stripped Eli's bed, spread on fresh sheets, fluffed the duvet, and after a few minutes' thought, fashioned a fish from a hand towel. After digging through what she thought of as her emergency bag of silliness, she came up with a little green plastic pipe for its mouth. Once the bedroom met her standards, the first load of laundry chugged in the washer, she turned her attention to the office. She'd have loved to fuss around the desk, in case he'd left any notes or clues about his work in progress. But a deal was a deal.
Instead, she dusted, vacuumed, restocked his bottled water and Mountain Dew. Wrote the next message Hester had dictated on a post-it, stuck it to a bottle. After wiping down the leather desk chair, she stood a while, studying his view. A good one, she thought. Wind and sun had all but vanished the snow. Today the sea spread in a good, strong blue, and the seagrass swayed in the breeze. She watched a fishing boat, dull red against deep blue, lumber over the water. Did he think of it as home now? She wondered. That view, that air, the sounds and scents. How long had it taken her to feel at home? She couldn't recall, not specifically. Maybe the first time Maureen knocked on her door holding a plate of brownies and a bottle of wine. Or maybe the first time she walked that beach and felt truly quiet in her mind. Like Eli, she'd escaped here. But she'd had a choice, and Whiskey Beach had been a deliberate one. The right one, she thought now. Absently, she traced a finger along her left ribs and the thin scar that rode them. She rarely thought of it now, rarely thought of what she'd escaped from. But Eli reminded her, and perhaps that was just one of the reasons she felt compelled to help him. She had plenty of others, and, she thought, she could add a new one to the mix. The smile she'd watched bloom over his face when he recognized Maureen. New goal, she determined. Giving Eli Landon reasons to smile more often. But right now, she needed to put his underwear in the dryer. Eli had barely settled in Neil Simpson's waiting area, declined the offer of coffee, water, or anything else made by one of the three receptionists, when Neil himself strode out to greet him.
Eli!
Neil, fit in his excellent suit, shot out a hand, took Eli's in a firm grip.
It's good to see you. Let's go on back to my office.
He moved athletically through the slickly decorated maze of the Gardner, Kopeck, Wright, and Simpson offices. A confident man, an exceptional attorney, who at 39 had grabbed full partner and put his name on the letterhead of one of the top firms in the city. Eli trusted him. Had to. Though they'd worked in different firms, often competing for the same clients, they'd moved in similar circles, had mutual friends. Or had, Eli thought, as most of his had slipped away under the constant media battering. In his office, with its wide, wintry view of the commons, Neil ignored his impressive desk and gestured Eli to a set of leather chairs.
"Let's take a minute first,"
Neil began as his attractive assistant brought in a tray with two oversized mugs filled with frothy cappuccino.
Thanks, Rosalie.
No problem. Can I get you anything else?
I'll let you know.
Neil sat back, studying Eli as his assistant stepped out, shut the door.
You look better.
So I'm told.
How's the book going?
Some days better than others. Altogether not bad.
And your grandmother? She's recovering from her accident?
She is. I'm going by to see her later. You don't have to do this, Neil. Brown eyes shrewd, Neil picked up his mug, settled back with it.
Do what?
The small talk. The relax-the-client routine. Neil sampled the coffee.
We were friendly before you hired me, but you didn't hire me because we were friendly, or that wasn't at the top of the list. When I asked you why you'd come to me, specifically, you had several good reasons. Among them was you believed the two of us approached the law and our work along similar lines. We represent the whole client. I want to know your state of mind, Eli. It helps me decide what actions or non-actions to recommend to you, and how much I'll have to persuade you to take a recommendation you might not feel ready for.
My state of mind changes like the goddamn tide. Right now, it's not optimistic, but more aggressive. I'm tired, Neil, of dragging this chain behind me. I'm tired of regretting I can't have what I had, even not knowing if I want it anymore. I'm tired of being stuck in neutral. Maybe better than sliding off a cliff in reverse, the way it felt a few months ago, but sure as hell isn't moving forward.
Okay.
There's nothing I can do to change how Lindsay's parents or anyone else thinks or feels about me. Not until Lindsay's killer is found, arrested, tried, convicted, and even then some will think I somehow slipped through the fingers of justice, so screw that!
Neil sipped again, nodded.
All right. Eli pushed to his feet.
I need to know for me,
he said, pacing the office.
She was my wife. It doesn't matter that we'd stopped loving each other, if we ever did. It doesn't matter that she cheated on me. It doesn't matter that I wanted the marriage over and her out of my life. She was my wife, and I need to know who came in our home and killed her.
We can put Carlson back on.
Eli shook his head.
No, he played it out. I want someone fresh, someone who comes into this fresh, starts at the beginning.
And that's not a dig at Carlson. His job was to find evidence to support reasonable doubt. I want new blood, not looking for evidence to prove I didn't do it, but to find who did.
On his legal pad, Neil made a lazy, looping note.
To go into it without automatically eliminating you.
Exactly. Whoever we hire should look at me and hard. I want a woman.
Neil smiled.
Who doesn't?
With a half laugh, Eli sat again.
That would be me for the past 18 months.
No wonder you look like shit.
I thought I looked better.
You do, which only shows how bad it got. You specifically want a female investigator.
I want a smart, experienced, thorough female investigator. One Lindsay's friends would be more apt to talk to open up with than they were with Carlson. We agreed with the police determination that Lindsay either let her killer into the house or the killer had a key. No forced entry. And after she got home at 4:30, coded in, the next coding in was my own at about 6:30. She was attacked from behind, meaning she turned her back on the killer. She wasn't afraid of him. There wasn't a fight, a struggle, a botched burglary. She knew and didn't fear her killer. A suskind's alibi, but what if he wasn't her only lover? Just the latest.
We went down that avenue,
Neil reminded him.
So we go down it again, slower, taking a detour if it looks promising. The cops can keep the case open, can keep scraping away at me. It doesn't matter, Neil. I didn't kill her, and they've exhausted every angle trying to prove I did. It's not about making that stop, not anymore. It's about knowing and being able to put it away.
Okay, I'll make some calls.
Thanks. And while we're on PIs, Kirby Duncan.
I already made calls there.
He rose, went to his desk, and brought back a file.
Your copy. Basically, he runs his own bare-bones firm. He does have a reputation for slipping around the edges, but he hasn't been formally cited. He was a cop for 8 years, BPD, and still has plenty of contacts there.
As Neil spoke, Eli opened the file, read the report.
I figured Lindsay's family hired him, but he seems too low-key, too basic for them.
Frowning over the details, he searched for another angle. Other possibilities.
I think they'd go for the flash, the fancier firm, higher tech and profile.
I agree, but people can make decisions like this based on a lot of factors. They might have gotten a recommendation from a friend, an associate, another family member.
Well, if they didn't hire him, I can't think who would.
Their attorney neither confirms nor denies,
Neil told him.
At this point, she's under no obligation to disclose the information. Duncan was a cop. It's possible he and Wolf know each other, and Wolf decided to make an investment. He's not going to tell me if that's the case.
Doesn't seem like his method either, but there's nothing we can do about Duncan asking questions around Whiskey Beach, whoever his client is. No law against it.
Just as you're under no obligation to speak with him. That doesn't mean our own investigator can't ask questions about him, gather information about him. And it doesn't mean we can't let it leak that we've hired someone to do just that.
Yeah,
Eli agreed. It's time to stir the pot.
The Piedmonts are at this point just making noise, trying to gin up doubt about your innocence, keep their daughter's case in the media storm, which has ebbed, and in the public eye. The side benefit of that is making your life as uncomfortable as possible, so this latest push with a PI might have come from them. They're screwing with me. Bluntly, yeah.
Let them. It can't be any worse than it was when this was a 24/7 circus. I got through that. I get through this.
He believed that now. He wouldn't simply exist through it, but get through it.
I'm not going to just stand there while they take shots at me. Not this time. They lost their daughter, and I'm sorry. But trying to fuck me over isn't going to work.
Then when their lawyer floats the idea of a settlement, which I expect she will at some point, that's a firm no.
That's a firm fuck you.
You are better.
I spent most of the last year in a fog. Shock, guilt, fear. Every time the wind changed, blew in a little clear, all I could see in it was another trap. I'm not out of the fog yet. Jesus, I'm afraid it may roll back in and choke me, but right now, today, I'm willing to risk one of those traps to get the hell out and breathe fresh air again.
Okay.
Neil balanced a silver Mont Blanc pen over his legal pad.
Let's talk strategy.
When he finally left Neil's office, Eli walked across to the Commons. He asked himself how he felt being back in Boston, even for a day. He couldn't quite find the answer. Everything here remained familiar, and there was comfort in that. There was hope and appreciation for the first green spears pushing up out of winter ground toward spring sun. People braved the wind. Not too much bluster in it today, to eat their lunch on benches, to take a walk as he did, or just to cut through on their way to somewhere else. He'd loved living there. He remembered that. That sense of familiarity again. The sense of place and purpose. He could walk from there if he wanted a good, strong hike to the offices where he'd once entertained and strategized with clients as Neil had done with him. He knew where to get his favorite coffee, where to grab a quick lunch, or to have a long, lingering one. He had his favorite bars, his tailor, the jeweler where he'd most often bought Lindsay's gifts. None of those were his anymore. And as he stood there, studying the hearty green of daffodils waiting to erupt, he realized he didn't regret it. Or not as keenly as he once had. So he'd find a new place to get not really a haircut and buy tulips for his grandmother. And before he went back to Whiskey Beach, he'd pack up the rest of his clothes, his workout gear. He'd get serious about reclaiming the parts of his life that were still there to be taken, and start really letting go of the rest. By the time he parked in front of the beautiful old red brick home on Beacon Hill, clouds had rolled in over the sun. He thought the oversized bouquet of purple tulips might offset that. He balanced them in one arm while he maneuvered the big bowl of forced hyacinths, one of his mother's favorites, out of the car. He could admit the drive, the meeting, the walking had left him more tired physically than he liked, but he wasn't going to let his family see it. Maybe the day had gone gloomy, but he clung to that hope he'd pulled to him in the Commons. Even as he crossed to the door, it opened.
"Mr. Eli! Welcome home, Mr. Eli!"
Carmel! He would have hugged their longtime housekeeper if his arms had been free. Instead, he bent down to her 5 feet of sturdy joy to kiss her cheek.
"You're too skinny."
"I know."
"I'm going to have Alice fix you a sandwich. You're going to eat it?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Look at those pretty flowers."
Eli managed to pull a tulip from the bunch. "For you."
"You're my sweetheart. Come in, come in. Your mother will be home very soon, and your father promised to be home by 5:30, so he wouldn't miss you if you don't stay. But you're going to stay. Have dinner. Alice is making Yankee pot roast and vanilla bean creme brulee for dessert."
"I'd better save her a tulip." Carmel's wide face warmed with a smile an instant before her eyes filled. "Don't." Here was the pain. The distress he'd seen on the faces of people he loved every day since Lindsay's murder. "Everything's going to be fine."
"It will. Of course it will. Here, let me take that bowl."
"They're for Mom."
"You're a good boy. You've always been a good boy, even when you weren't. Your sister's coming to dinner, too."
"I should have bought more flowers." She'd blinked away the tears and now gave the air a brush with her hand to send him on his way.
You take those to your grandmother. She's up in her sitting room, probably on that computer. You can't keep her off it. All hours of the day and night. And I'll bring you the sandwich and a vase for those tulips.
Thanks.